Thank you, Marnie. Next, you'll learn from Radio Norfolk's David Clayton about his 40 years in broadcasting, then about the work of the Norfolk Community Law Service, and finally, who and what are Norwich hosts? First, Mark was delighted to renew his acquaintance with David Clayton.
Hello there, this is Mark Smith here, and with me I've got David Clayton. Now, welcome to Chatterbox, David.
Thank you.
And David, you're the managing editor of BBC Radio Norfolk, and we've come to the forum here in the heart of the BBC with both television and radio. We've managed to find a quiet room to have a little chat to you this morning. We're interviewing on Christmas Eve, so a little bit quieter around here at the BBC. And I understand at the moment, David, we've both got something very much in common. I've just had my 40th birthday this year, and you're also celebrating 40 years behind the microphone.
Well, it's probably more than 40 years behind the microphone. What I think I'm celebrating, although celebrating is part, I'm just marking it quietly, is 40 years on the radio. I mean, I was a DJ in nightclubs before that, starting in about 1971 as a mobile disc jockey, so I suppose you could say I was talking into microphones then. But really, in December 74, I helped some other people start hospital radio, which wasn't in the sense of real radio over transmitters, but it was a hospital radio station. And so I suddenly realised a few weeks back that this, you know, a week or so ago, I'd be celebrating or marking 40 years on the radio in both hospital radio and BBC styles, really.
Yes, wow. And you must have seen a tremendous amount of change since that period in time.
The change is really obvious in one sense, in that hospital radio was, with all the nicest will in the world at the time, quite primitive, and we were all doing it voluntarily, and we weren't on the air all the time. And of course now we have a local radio station. When hospital radio began, there was no local radio in Norfolk or Norwich at all. So we were kind of filling a vacuum, but you couldn't hear us out in the street anyway. You could only hear us if you were in hospital.
Yes.
So, of course, the big change was then I started doing what I might call proper radio. That's not to denigrate hospital radio at all, because it does a fabulous job, but with transmitters and the big budgets of the BBC and so on. So that's the really big change. But in essence, radio is radio. It's one person talking to one person, although you're talking to lots. You know, in your head, you're always talking to one person. So that whole discipline of radio hasn't changed. It's just the medium through which I've done it has changed.
And when did you actually start at the BBC?
Well, when Radio Norfolk began... Well, no, there's a bit of a pretext to that. I mean, Radio Norfolk began in September 1980, and I tried to get a job, but I wasn't given a job. I applied and didn't get them. So I ended up going in as a kind of a jobbing freelance, doing little bits of this, that and the other. And gradually that grew up to a full-time job. But prior to that, there'd been what we call regional radio, which is a programme called Roundabout East Anglia. Some of your listeners might remember it. It was regional on Radio 4. And it wasn't local radio because it's covering the same footprint as Look East in a radio sense. And I did a little bit of work on that. I was auditioned to be the presenter of it. I didn't get it. John Mountford got it. But I did do a couple of reports for them and have a contract dated, I think, 1978 or 79 for 5 guineas. It was always guineas, for doing a report on a band who just released a new single in Norfolk. And so that was, in a sense, where I came in. And then local radio began. I tried to get my foot in the door, failed miserably, but then gradually went on air and doing little guest spots and so on, and gradually they gave me a show. So that was from September 1980.
Wow, gosh. And I guess in terms of the equipment you were using back in 1980, that must have changed a lot, because presumably you were on vinyl records and things.
Yeah, there were. I mean, it was very much, I was at home as a disc jockey because I was playing records, I was queuing up on turntables. And there were tape machines, which I wasn't so used to, and there were cartridge machines to play the jingles, which was a luxury, because as a DJ you wouldn't have those doing a mobile disco. So the equipment then was all tape and all analogue. And it wasn't until, I'm just trying to think, when we, about 2000, 2001, we started installing digital equipment in the old building in Surrey Street before we came here to the Forum. And then whole new desks were built, which were all digital. So we used to wander down to the studio in the old days with a box full of tapes, records, scripts. And now we just wander in, log onto a computer, and everything is there.
Incredible, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And I guess you must have probably seen a difference in how you've interacted with the audiences, because, you know, you've now got texting, internet, email, so, you know, it's not always kind of a case of relying on listeners to write in, is it?
No, I mean, in the early days, well, I remember when Radio Norfolk started, we run competitions and ask people to take part, and they would. And we used to say, phone in on Norwich 617321, and we used to get complaints from people who said, I haven't got a phone, it's unfair. So back then, there was still the differentiation between people who had a phone and people who hadn't. And of course, then it went on to, you can email us, and people would go, well, I haven't got a computer, that's not fair. So you'd have to go, well, you can write, email or phone. And then it got to texting and tweeting and Facebooking. So when you ask the audience to interact now, they interact on so many platforms, and they interact instantaneously. But what seems to have happened over the years is, whilst the phone was the main, that was the best way of interacting, because you could have a real conversation, more people now, particularly on, say, Canary Call, which is the football phone-in, in the old days they would just phone in, but now most of the traffic is on Twitter.
Yes.
And then we will throw out what people are saying on Twitter, which might prompt some people to call, because it might be so outrageous what they're saying on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the interactive nature of it has changed dramatically.
Yes. And that must have changed how you kind of sit behind the microphone in the studio as a presenter.
Well, what it allows you to do is use material that the audience are giving you, or reaction that the audience are giving you, much quicker. It was Terry Wogan who, somebody said, he's a very canny Irishman, isn't he? He gets people to write into his programme, then sells all the stuff back to them in a book he writes. You know, which is true, he does. He's written many books where it's about the audience comedy that they've written in.
Yes.
So, you know, I've always felt that radio is two-way. It's not one-way. It always has to be two-way. The first daily programme I got was called the Norfolk Airline, and I always said, it's about, they know more than we do. That's they being the collective audience. So let's use that. Mm. And when you're broadcasting now, people will be telling you stuff you don't necessarily want to know or need to know, but they'll be interacting with you immediately and fulsomely, but only if you ask them the right questions.
Yes. And I guess over the last 40 years, there must be lots of memories and highlights for you. Is there anything that sticks out in your memory as being particularly memorable?
I suppose the first proper programme I did, which was a jukebox jury thing with people voting on whether a record was a hit or a miss. That's your first programme, so that's really nerve-wracking. I then did a mid-morning programme from 83, a mid-morning sort of phone-in interactive programme, which, if you watch daytime television now, or hear daytime television, it is largely the format we were doing on the radio in 83, just like a magazine. And that was great because we interviewed some really, really important people, and now I realise how important they were. I interviewed Group Captain Leonard Cheshire, who started the Cheshire Homes, who was, I think, on the atomic bomb run of Hiroshima or something. He had a major, as an observer, I think that's what marked the rest of his life. I interviewed that man, and there was an aura about him.
Wow.
There was, you know, he sat there and you thought, how special is this man? I interviewed Norman Wisdom, who, you know, I would still laugh hysterically at his films. I've had Ken Dodd in the studio. I've had Manuel, Andrew Sachs, who came in, and I talked to him about how brilliant he was as Manuel in Fawlty Towers. For the radio station's 20th birthday, which would have been, if you think about it, the year 2000.
Yes.
I decreed that we could all of us, if we had a real inkling to interview the person we've always wanted to interview, deciding who I wanted to do straight away. And several of us did the interview of our dreams. I did Murray Walker, who I just think is the broadcaster's broadcaster. Went to his house and met him. And that, for me, is a highlight. And then you have highlights which aren't highlights, really. I mean, doing late-night phone-in radio, which I kind of remember doing on a Sunday night, to the whole region, just putting out stuff that people might call in about. Mm. And I remember one night I played the song Where Do You Go To My Lovely by Peter Sarsted. And it's a song with a story in the lyrics. And I just stopped, and because I could, no one was telling me, I just mused what the lyrics were.
Yeah.
And said to people, because there's talk about you went to Joanne Le Pen, your clothes are all made by Balmain, there's diamond pearls in your hair, you knew the Aga Khan. All that is in this. And I said to everyone, let's just go through these lyrics. and we went all the way through the lyrics and said, has anyone been to Joanne Le Pen? What is it? Who's got some clothes made by Balmain? People were ringing in. Yeah. And the last line was and a friend of Sacha Distel. If you listen to the song, and somebody saying, and a friend of Sacha Distel, famous 60s French heartthrob singer. Yes. Yes. And I ticked off everything in the song, but at the end I hadn't got a friend of Sacha Distel. Does anyone know Sacha Distel? And at the end, at about 5 to 12, before I went off air, a bloke rang in and he said, I'm not a friend of Sacha Distel, David, but I've stood next to him in the gents. Well, that'll do. You know, it was just funny. So, you know, highlights like that are not earth-shattering. They're just fun radio.
Yes.
And so I've done some lovely, lovely radio with the listeners, which I've enjoyed and would, if somebody said, right, you've had your time on earth now, what do you want to be remembered as or with? And I'd say, just play that stuff.
Thank you, David. Sorry I had to cut that interview, but you'll hear more from David in the next chat around.